Welcome back. My first guest, as always, is a great, if not brilliant, Luke Jones. Luke, welcome in.
Well, I don't know about brilliant, but I appreciate the kind words, Dennis. It's great to talk to you as always.
Me as well. That was my Howard Cosell. That was my tribute to Howard. He would always say the great, if not brilliant. So it was a very appropriate to greet you with that this morning. And, because I've texted you from the ballpark, I went Sunday and Monday, and man, I'm having a ball watching these Orioles. I'm all in, and I've been very transparent about being a casual fan. I'm very much on the bandwagon, Luke. I'm enjoying the Orioles. I'm enjoying all the rule changes. I'm enjoying the faster pace of the game, having more hours in my day. They're checking a lot of boxes for me these days.
Yeah, and going into the final game of this homestand with the second best record in baseball, 13 games over 500, and it's been fun. It is, and we've talked about it. And as you mentioned earlier this week, I mean, you have an opportunity to see Shohei Ohtani pitch and hit on Monday night. Wasn't the outcome the Orioles were looking for, but just from a baseball fan standpoint, one of those players that you tell your kids, your grandkids about that you saw them play. I mean, that's the kind of generational talent Shohei Ohtani is. And that's why I've talked about this a lot with Nestor. I talk about this a lot with other people in my life, just talking sports, where I just say, enjoy this guy. I don't know how long he's going to continue to pitch and hit at such a high level doing both, because I mean, the comparison is always Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth only did it both for a very short period of time. So even looking at that, I mean, it's, he's very much rapidly approaching uncharted territory here. So that was awesome to see. But I think for the Orioles, good to see coming back and winning the next two games after the defeat on Monday night, and a chance to wrap up the homestand on a high note and head back out on the road, which is going to be a challenge going to Toronto, and the Yankees coming up as well. So business is going to pick up a little bit, although it has here of late. We've talked about their schedule being more challenging, but I mean, it is really becoming more and more appointment viewing, watching the Orioles on a nightly basis because of some of what you mentioned with the rule changes, and easier to watch, and it's over by 9 o'clock a lot of nights with these 6:35 starts. But they're winning games, and they're putting themselves in position to have a really, really fun summer.
Yeah, Wednesday night, as an example, I'm working on my fishing gear. I'm restringing lines and putting together lures and whatnot, and straightening up my tackle box. Next thing you know, the game's over. So for me, it's something nice to have on TV. I love the pace of the game. And circling back to Ohtani, he is must-see. I was very grateful to witness what I did. I was rooting for him to get a double. I don't know how many other Oriole fans were, but I wanted to see history. If you're going to lose, you might as well be at the wrong end of a historical event.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he had a chance to hit for the cycle just a few nights after Cedric Mullins hit for the cycle in Baltimore against Pittsburgh last Friday night was remarkable to see. But he is just such a tremendous talent. That home run he hit was, and I've watched a lot of games at Camden Yards, Dennis, as a fan and as a reporter, of course, and there are a few home runs that have been as impressive as that one. I mean, that was just an absolute rocket. Again, you don't want it to come at the Orioles' expense, but as you mentioned, if you're just a sports fan, a baseball fan in general, when you have an opportunity to see something special, and hey, he still got on base, what, four times, whatever it was. And that was something that hadn't been done by a starting pitcher in a really long time. So just remarkable. It really is. And, going back to the WBC and his matchup against Mike Trout and just what Ohtani's done over the last few years, it really has been great for the game of baseball. And again, cool opportunity for Orioles fans to get to see him pitch, get to see him up close and personal these last few games.
All right. Orioles bullpen has been lights out, right? You got the two big guys in there, and Michael Gibbons coming back soon. But starting pitching, Luke, talk to me through this. I love Kramer. I saw him opening day. I believe it's 5-1, if I'm not mistaken. Bradish looks to be okay, but aside from that, I mean, I'm worried about starting pitching.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And look, going into the season, I never thought this was going to be a great Starting rotation. I think the potential is there for it to get better as the year goes on. You just mentioned it. I mean, Dean Kramer, who had a really rough April, and you just noted him as someone pitching well. Tyler Wells has pitched well. I think overall, Kyle Gibson has been about what you would expect him to be. He's a veteran pitcher who is going to give you innings. He's going to give you a really solid chance to win. Every 5 days he goes out there, but he's not going to put up great numbers. You know, he's going to be kind of a league average starting pitcher. So I think where you're really looking at this point is you're looking for Grayson Rodriguez to find his stride. I think at this point in time, you keep running him out there. That's just how I feel about this, because he's got the highest ceiling of anyone in that rotation right now. And it's tough. You know, it's tough to pitch at the major league level. And you know, you hear people say sometimes, oh, send him down. You know, he's struggling. His ERA is this. And I understand it to a point, but at the same time, what about going, unless it's an issue where you feel like a player has completely lost all confidence, and I'm not there with Grayson Rodriguez. I don't think that's the issue as much as he just needs to be, he needs to be finer with his pitches. His fastball command needs to be a little bit better. You know, he has to be able to, you know, sequences pitches properly and make quality pitches with two strikes. And those are all things you learn at the major league level against major league hitters. There's no magic way to learn that against triple A talent, triple A competition. So it does need to be better. If for no other reason, I think you run the risk of leaning so heavily on that bullpen that you get to August and September that those guys just aren't quite as effective. And you know, I think the Orioles may have dealt with a little bit of that last year, although it's tough to gauge because they traded Jorge Lopez at the trade deadline and hindered their ability to make the playoffs as a result, even if just a little bit. But yeah, you know, that it's kind of where they are. And I think that's why for me these next couple months are going to be so fascinating, because I think there are going to be some opportunities at the trade deadline. When you look at some of the talent they have at AAA, look how well the tides have played, but you have guys that kind of feel like they're at a point where they have nothing left to prove at AAA, whether you're talking about a Jordan Westberg. I mean, Colton Cowser hasn't been at AAA for long, but he's absolutely raked. You have some other guys there that you kind of just look at it and say, okay, is there a spot for them at the major league level? So two ways to approach that. You can potentially deal any of those players, or you look at the major league roster and say, is there someone on the major league roster that we deal? And you say, okay, well, I don't want to do that. I have a contending club here. But if you feel you have someone at AAA who's ready to slide in and be as good and maybe be better long-term, might you be better served to deal someone to go get a starting pitcher? So, you know, I think that's going to be, those are going to be some of the options that are there for Mike Elias. And we'll see how it ultimately plays out. I think finances certainly factor into this equation, and questioning ownership and payroll and willingness to spend money if the right opportunity presents itself. But yeah, I'm with you, Dennis. I mean, look, the Orioles haven't had a great starting rotation, and you still see where they are in the standings. So I'm not going to sit here and say that they can't make the playoffs without a better starting rotation. However, if you're going to ask me what they can do in October, yeah, yeah, I feel like you're going to have to upgrade there. You're going to have to get some improvement there. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, keep in mind, they are going to be in a position where they're going to be getting some guys back, mm-hmm. you know, where you look at, you know, where they're going to be. So the rotation can get better, whether it's a DL haul, you know, looking at drawing a blank here. You know, you look at a DL haul as far as the rotation. But you also have John Means coming back from Tommy John surgery, probably in July. So, you know, you've got some internal mm-hmm. options that could help you out. And I'm not saying that anyone should expect the John Means that threw a no-hitter 2 years ago to come back in July, but he can be an option for you. DL Hall can be an option for you, even if DL Hall might profile better long-term as a reliever. They do have some other guys that, you know, Drew Rahm has pitched well at AAA. So Cole Irvin is back in the majors and pitching out of the bullpen. So, you know, so they have options, but again, as it pertains to upside, yeah. Other than Grayson Rodriguez really finding his stride, which I'm not saying won't happen, you do kind of look at this and say, is there a move to be made that they can go out and get a number one pitcher, or, you know, maybe not even a number one, but say an excellent number two kind of pitcher. I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez, the Orioles saw him pitch a couple times for Detroit. You know, once upon a time was an Orioles prospect. He's the kind of guy that might be available via trade that you can go out and get if you're willing to take on a contract that does include some real money. It's not insane money, but it's real money for the next couple of years. Are you willing to do that? So those are ultimately things that they're going to have to look at and ultimately decide upon. But I think your concern is valid in the sense of, I think the rotation's been better than it had been earlier in the year, but certainly still not the strength of this team. And if you want this bullpen to continue to do what it's done, you're either going to need better starting pitching, a little more length out of that, or you're going to have to score more runs, which that's easier said than done as well, because they've just played a lot of close games, which is a credit because they've won those games. But history would typically tell you that if you're playing that many close games, playing a lot of one-run games, you tend to experience some regression to the mean. And not saying that that'll happen entirely with the Orioles, but it does make it more challenging. So yeah, they need to get more out of their starting pitching. And the hope is that they'll get that as the season goes on with potentially some internal candidates. But yeah, I think you'd love to see them be in the mix to make a major move at the trade deadline to augment that rotation.
The Orioles have done a really nice job, the front office, of taking discards from other teams and picking them up, whether it's, you know, and look at the victory over the Angels Wednesday night. Bradish came from a trade from the Angels. Colombe was purchased from the Twins. Cano traded with the Twins. And also Batista, he got released by the Marlins. So they've done a very nice job, not just with the farm system, but they've picked up some players that have had a positive impact on this team this year.
Yeah, they've really been a team that has been able to, as you put it, teams that have discarded players, right? Guys that have been waiver claims, you know, and this has been pitchers, this has been bullpen arms, and this has been even position players. I mean, even going back, I mean, Anthony Santander, this was the Dan Duquette era. He was a Rule 5 pick. Jorge Mateo had been waived and cast off by a couple different teams, despite the fact that he was once considered a prize prospect. So, you know, that happens, but it's really happened in the bullpen where you look at that and, you know, other than a couple guys, I mean, it's been guys that have been picked up and they've made adjustments. I mean, we'll begin with Yennier Cano. I mean, with what he's done, I mean, it was Felix Bautista was the guy that came out of nowhere last year, and, you know, had kind of been a journeyman minor leaguer. And, you know, with Yennier Cano, it's just been remarkable. When they acquired him from the Twins, you kind of looked at that deal and said, okay, this, you know, they're acquiring a reliever that, you know, I see he's big guy, has a nice arm, but he's in his late 20s. He's never really had any success to write home about. When we saw him in the majors last year, it did not look good. There was talk throughout the offseason of whether this guy would even remain on the 40-man roster. And he's been in the majors for a little over a month. I mean, it was earlier this week that it was a month since he was recalled from AAA Norfolk. And right now, Dennis, and this is odd to say this about a setup man, but if you look at American League Rookie of the Year candidates, Yennier Cano might be at the top of the list when you really look at how valuable he's been. I mean, he's going to give up a run at some point. He's going to walk a guy at some point, but it has really just been incredible to see what he's done. And it's been such a great story with him, you know, coming from Cuba and almost giving up on baseball. And again, not really finding the success that he wanted to find. And again, the Orioles identified something in him, and that's something that I think you have to really credit Mike Elias and baseball ops and the scouting department, that for as much as they went through this deliberate tanking rebuilding process over the last 4 to 5 years, they still had an eye for identifying talent, identifying traits in either pitchers or position players who hadn't had success, but they said, you know what? This guy has a really good whatever pitch, or this guy has a really good skill set that we think with some of our player development and some of our adjustments and the technology we use to cultivate that we can make some adjustments here and turn this into a productive player for us. And they've done that. And it doesn't mean they bat a thousand doing it, but they've done that. And again, to see it firsthand again on Wednesday night, Yennier Cano comes in and just, you know, easy 1-2-3 eighth inning to turn it over to Batista for the ninth. I mean, it's been fun to watch, and it's something that you have to be able to do. It's great to talk about spending money. I spent 2 minutes talking about it just a little bit earlier in our conversation, and that's part of it. But if you really truly want to build something special and sustain it, that player development side is so important. You have to draft well, you have to develop well, you have to be able to look for talent elsewhere that hasn't panned out, because it's really hard to do. In the same way that the Orioles have had some great prospects that haven't panned out, and they've gone elsewhere and figured it out, and sometimes they don't. At the same time, you can identify players that were somewhere else and didn't work out for whatever reason, but if you identify that there's something to work with, it's kind of that ball of clay, right? That you can mold it and kind of, manipulate that a little bit and turn it into something that can help your ball club. The Orioles, we saw it last year with the bullpen. We're seeing it again this year with some guys that you wouldn't have expected to emerge, and they have. And it's been so important for this team because their bullpen has been so vital to their success.
Yeah, lots to like about the Orioles. It seems like they have a lot of confidence. They feel like they're never out of it. They feel like they can come back against any team, no matter the score, which is a far cry from a couple of years ago when they were hopeless, in the third or fourth inning, right? We talked about this before. Now there is some swagger and some confidence about this team.
No question about it. I mean, talking to Austin Hayes recently in the clubhouse after a game, he made comment of remembering those days where they were out of the game in the third or fourth inning. I mean, the number of times that you'd sit there in the press box or you'd go to a game at that point in time, and the biggest thing you're wondering by the fourth inning is which position player is going to finish out the game for you, because
Right.
you don't want to burn through your entire pitching staff. And it was ugly. It was really ugly. And it hurts your fan base. It does. And, for people that have talked about attendance and why aren't more people coming, and it's getting better, but it takes a while. And that when you really look at the Orioles, not just over the last 5 years, but for the better part of the last 30, 35 years, dare I say close to 40 years, there hasn't been a whole lot to write home about, save for a handful of seasons. So, but there is enthusiasm now. And I think with this being a largely homegrown ball club and to having some of these guys that have been drafted and developed here and came up through the minor leagues, I think fans can identify with guys a little bit more and they want to buy into it a little bit more. So there's still work to be done. And as much as we talk about spending on free agents or trading for guys, you'd love to see a couple contract extensions mixed in there. And again, that's a question for John Angelos and ownership. That until we see otherwise, deserves skepticism. But in the meantime, it's been really fun to watch, and they're never out of it. They rarely make it easy, as I mentioned. They're playing really close games, but when you have the bullpen that they have, they found a way, and it's been so refreshing to watch. Going back to really last June when things really started to turn around, really July, with the winning streak and all that, but. It's a good time to be an Orioles fan. And I haven't said that very many times really over the course of my life, but this is certainly one of those times where that description is appropriate.
Luke, you alluded to it at the beginning of our segment, in terms of the talent they have with the farm system, and particularly in the middle infielders, right? Do you have a There seems to be a bit of a log jam forming, which is not a bad problem to have. Middle infielders can play anywhere on the field, except pitcher and catcher. You can move them around, so they'll have some significant trade bait should they choose to go that route. You have Jackson Holliday, for instance, who's doing a really nice job in the minors right now, but they do have some guys coming up, and they're all playing that shortstop, second base. Of course, you can slide them over to third as well, but they do have a lot of prospects at that position, at those positions.
They do, and that's something that you want to have, quite frankly.
Yep.
We talk about this a lot, and you and I spend so much time talking about football. You talk about the term being strong up the middle, and that obviously applies in baseball when you're talking about catchers, but more so shortstops and center fielders, because the idea is if you can play shortstop or center field, you can probably move to other positions. Whereas
Yes.
if you draft someone who's already a first baseman, really, the only thing they can probably do is
Right.
DH, right? If you draft someone who's a corner outfielder, the only thing they might be able to do is move to first base. So, and that's not a hard and fast rule, but that's generally how it works. So you want better athletes, right? You want guys that can potentially move around the diamond, and someone might start out as a shortstop and they wind up at third base. And we're seeing that with Gunnar Henderson right now. You just mentioned Jackson Holliday, who, my goodness, to see what this kid is doing at high single A already. where he is just absolutely raking for Aberdeen. It's funny. I remember talking to someone earlier this season about the possibility of Jackson Holliday. Maybe he'd see the major leagues by the end of next year. Now I'm starting to think, how are you going to keep him out of the major leagues next year? I mean, that's how good he's been. And he'll go through a slump at some point because this is really tough. And that's just how baseball works. But the point is, they have plenty of talent. I mentioned Jordan Westberg a little bit earlier in the segment. He's done just about everything you can expect someone to do at AAA at this point. I don't know how much longer you can keep him down. Again, there's always the trade possibility. And at some point in time, because you do look at the Orioles, and while there are some interesting arms in their system, certainly they're much more, they're much more, they have much more depth at the position, the position players, looking at it from that standpoint. So that's part of it. But you look at these infielders. Yeah, I mean, we've seen Joey Ortiz come up and hasn't necessarily shown it with the bat yet, but even on Wednesday night, he spells Jorge Mateo, makes a couple great plays in the field. I mean, you see what kind of defensive shortstop he is, and there's value there, even if it's as a utility player. So they and that's part of, that's been by design, not just to draft middle infielders, but to move them around and to have guys that can play multiple positions. And that's been something they've wanted to do. And some of these outfielders or some of these middle infielders, you might even see in the outfield at some point in time. I know that's something that has been mentioned and talked about. I mean, we've seen it with Taron Vavra, who was a middle infielder, and now we've seen him, play right field for the Orioles at Camden Yards. Westberg is someone that I think could end up seeing some, maybe not regular starts in the outfield, but sporadic. He could be a super utility kind of player when he gets that call, which again feels like it's going to have to be at some point because he's just been so good at AAA. But these are good problems to have. You want to have, we talk about this a lot with the Ravens and deep depth and good problems to have and who's going to play where and all of that. One, you're going to have injuries. Two, you're going to have guys that are going to struggle. And three, I mean, prospects are still prospects, right? And as much as you think that a guy's going to be this great player, it doesn't always pan out that way. I mean, it has with Adley Rutschman, with Matt Wieters, and I don't want to say he didn't pan out. Matt Wieters was a multi-time all-star catcher, but was he Johnny Bench? Was he Joe Mauer with power? No, he didn't really fit that description. So, so much of this is just projection, and it doesn't always play out that way. But the more and more options that you have at these different positions, you're just improving your chances of one, being able to field a great major league club, and two, giving yourself some organizational depth that from which you can then trade to add and augment at other positions like the starting rotation.
Great stuff, Luke, in regard to the Orioles. Let's shift over to the Ravens, show them a little bit of love in their offseason. Great to see Marlon Humphrey and Roquan Smith so much involved so early. They're getting involved with the workouts. They're getting involved with the city. It's just refreshing to see these guys. But the question I have, what about the offense? I would love to see, and I've mentioned this on Twitter, I'd love to see the offense match that intensity. I just don't see it.
Yeah, and as I wrote earlier this week at BaltimorePositive.com, I'm willing to give this to the start of OTAs before I'm really going to get into Lamar Jackson and being there. But your point, I think what Mike McDonald had to say was very telling. I'm guessing John Harbaugh privately was pleased to hear him speak in the terms in which he did about Roquan Smith and Marlon Humphrey. And look, I'll reiterate what I said. I believe I said this to you when we talked last week. When you're out there for the football school workouts, it is very rudimentary. It's very elementary. It's very basic. It's basically a walkthrough. It's maybe a walkthrough on steroids. They're not even wearing helmets and shells and all that. But your point's well taken. And I think for me, again, this question or this conversation becomes much more pertinent and much more relevant if Lamar Jackson's still not there next week. But I'll point out, and this is where your criticism, or at least asking the question, let's say, applies to some other guys on the offense. I haven't seen Ronnie Stanley out there. I haven't seen Mark
Exactly.
Andrews out there. And again, it's still very early. All these guys are there for OTAs. To me, it's a non-factor because they still have 3 weeks of OTAs and they have a week of mandatory mini camp and they have all of training camp. But It's a fair question. And I'm not going to sit here, Dennis, and say that you're wrong in asking that because I don't feel that way. It's voluntary. I get it. At the same time, this is a team that, let's face it, and I've talked about this with Nestor a lot here recently. We focus so much on Lamar, and because the quarterback gets too much criticism and too much credit in certain scenarios. But that's just the player that everyone's going to point to in the same way that the head coach gets all of that as well. But you look at this team in its totality, other than Justin Tucker, and by no disrespect to Tucker, he's a kicker and he was a rookie at the time. And look, he had a really important part in that.
Yes,
But
he did.
I mean, this team hasn't gotten out of the divisional round in over a decade now. I mean, that's just reality. So all of these guys are feeling that same kind of rep where, when are you going to break through? It's great to talk about regular season success. And look, you need that regular season success to get into the tournament, right? To get into the postseason. But if you want to get to the next level, what are you doing? What are you doing to go above and beyond to make that happen? And look, do I think being there for football school is the end all be all? Do I think it's necessarily all that high on the list? No, probably not, if I'm being totally truthful and sincere with you, Dennis. However, is it a byproduct of needing to have a little more of that drive and urgency? I don't know. Well, time will tell. Like I said, if we're talking about some of these, some of the aforementioned names not being there for OTAs, then with Monken and the new offense and trying to help younger guys come along, then I think that becomes a more valid criticism at that point in time. So we'll see. Ultimately, I've said that I expect Lamar to be there for OTAs. The general expectation across the league is that quarterbacks are there for OTAs. And I would think specifically when you're coming off of getting a $260 million contract, expectations are there for you to be there for OTAs. So if he's not, I get it. People will say it's voluntary, and some people will say that they don't care about that. But at some point in time, you need to start, if you're truly all in and that focused and that obsessed on winning a Super Bowl, I'm not being there. I'm not sure that's the best approach to take, even just from a perception standpoint with your coaches and your teammates. So we'll see. Again, I don't, I'd be lying to you if I cared, if I was really even pretending to care about football school attendance. But as it pertains to OTAs, we're going to see across the league, other than guys that are much, much older, Tom Brady fit that description late in his career, or guys that are in a contract kind of situation, like Lamar was last year. And I understood that from a business standpoint. Other than those types of guys, quarterbacks are there and they're out there doing it. So
Sure.
if he's not out there next week, then I suspect that the floodgates are going to open with criticism. And I'm certainly not going to be someone that's going to be feeling all that strongly about defending him at that point in time.
Yeah, well, yeah, in the corporate world and just looking at my business, my industry and the person I work for, you know what they want. And so they know, the players know what John Harbaugh wants. When it's an organization, when it's we'd like for you to be there, means to me it means you need to be there, period, from a leadership standpoint. And the other piece is, and I wasn't picking on Lamar Jackson, you know that I was talking about Ronnie Stanley and Mark Andrews, J.K. Dobbins, you name it, across the board. But with Lamar specific to whom much is given, much is expected, and I don't think that's a stretch to say that. I think it's fair. And the other piece of it is Mike McDonald's been there for a couple of years now. He's got a system in. You got a brand new offensive coordinator. You have a brand new offense you're installing. You would think that they'd want to absorb as much as possible. And I'll leave it at that right now. Like you, I'm not geeked up about it, but at some point it'll become indefensible. Not that I'm looking to defend anyone either.
I think that's fair. And again, like I said, you look at OTAs across the league. I mean, if Patrick Mahomes is there, and look, I want to be clear about this. Patrick Mahomes in some recent years hasn't necessarily been in Kansas City for this part of the offseason
Sure.
and has even had times where he's brought his skill players to where he lives, or they'll do a little retreat or whatever, and they're working out and doing something like that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that. And look, I'm not suggesting that Lamar's not working or that Lamar's not even working hard. He posted on social media a little bit of working out on, I think it was Wednesday. So that was great to see. But I'll be clear about this. contrary to popular belief, just because something doesn't take place on social media doesn't mean it didn't happen, and vice versa. If it does show up on social media, it doesn't mean that it's authentic and where it needs to be. And I don't say that about Lamar. I say that about anything.
Now, look,
But
I didn't see the clip. Was he working out on the home gym or on his home, the entire gym or something else? I'm saying it tongue in
he was,
cheek, of course.
of course, of course. No, it looked like it was just a field in, I assume, in South Florida. I saw palm trees in the background, so it wasn't Owings Mills. But
Okay.
again, we'll see how this plays out, and I expect him to be there. I'm sure the Ravens, if they didn't expect him to be there for football school, which I think there was at least a strong hope that he would be there, from what I've gathered, they certainly expect him to be there for OTAs. And if he's not, then and the same goes for any of those guys you mentioned, Ronnie Stanley, Mark Andrews, Kevin Zeitler, all those different
All the
guys
guys.
that you are talking about a new offense. That,
Yep.
not to say that, again, it's not even to say that that means the season's going to be a failure, or they're not going to make the playoffs, or they're not going to do this or that, but it
Just
is one of
saying,
those things that
it
you
would
point
be
to and say, are you all
nice.
in? Yeah. So, that's part
Okay.
of the d discussion. And again, next week OTAs begin. That for me, that's kind of the inflection point where I look at this and say, all right, what's going on here? You just got a crazy signing bonus, and you've got all this money you're getting the next couple of years. And you went to OTAs in previous years before last year, so why not anymore? So I think that'll be a fair question. But again, I'm willing
Yeah,
to.
we'll see.
Football school, again, it's very, very rudimentary. I think for me, I kind of look at it as far as who it's most appropriate for. It does feel rookies and young players and guys that are very much on the roster bubble. But now business will pick up as you get into OTAs now, and now you can start doing offense first defense and full team practices.
Yeah, the optics are great for the defense, though. I mean, it's just a good
Sure.
look for Roquan Smith and Marlon Humphrey. I mean, and I'll leave it at that. It's just, here are two guys, they're all in, and you want to see that from your leadership. And to me, the defensive unit last year, particularly with the arrival of Roquan Smith, even when Lamar Jackson was on the field, was the better unit down the stretch.
It was. I mean, that second half of the season, really, from the
Picked up.
arrival of Roquan Smith with at the Saints game, and they got Tyus Bowser back. They got some other guys that a little bit healthier than they had been. They got Marcus Williams back for the stretch. That was a defense that was, kind of in that top three
Oh,
as far as
absolutely.
being that kind of a defense in the
And
NFL
look,
over the
you
second half
remember
of the.
when Ray Lewis arrived, he wanted to make the linebacker crew the best squad on the team. And you like that about a player that can elevate. So when he elevated that the linebackers and Jonathan Ogden wanted to elevate the offensive line, it became a domino effect. And hopefully the rest of the team will catch fire from Marlon to Roquan to bleed over to the offense, and they forge that identity that can push through the regular season and have some success, some continued success deep into the playoffs.
Exactly. I mean, I've said it, I've written it at BaltimorePositive.com. I mean, the defense, there's still some question as far as outside corner depth and the pass rush, and will Oweh and Ajabo step up this year, especially Ajabo with first full NFL season where, he was basically on a red shirt last year with the injury. But the defense, high expectations, but this offense at this point, there are no more excuses. It's time for this offense, and specifically the passing game, to be really good, to be the kind of group that you look at and say, not just make the playoffs, they've done that, right? I mean, we've talked
They
about it,
have.
and Lamar's a better passer than his critics want to give him credit for. I've said that over and over, and I'll continue to say that. But for this team to make that deeper run into January, they need their offense to be ready for those kinds of matchups. That idea of, if you have to be in a position where you're going to throw the ball 40 times or 45 times, and you're going to get into a little more of a shootout, because we know, even if you have a great defense, great offense beats great defense in today's
Yeah,
NFL. The
absolutely.
rules and the game is designed to be that way. So if you find yourself in that position, or if you find yourself trailing by 10 points, can you be better equipped to throw the ball and throw the ball a lot if you have to? That doesn't mean that that's going to be the way you always want to do it. And I still will say that this team is still built to run the football at a very high level. But you didn't sign Lamar Jackson to $52 million per year. and you didn't bring in Todd Monken to replace Greg Roman, and you didn't bring in Odell Beckham and draft Zay Flowers and bring in Nelson Aguilar, and to draft the two tight ends they drafted behind Mark Andrews, who's on a premium contract. You didn't do all those things to have a middle of the road or below average passing game anymore. All those things are in place now for this to be a really good passing game. Doesn't have to be the best in the league, mind you, but for it to be the kind of passing game that you can look at and say, you know what? Maybe we're not going to be as great statistically as Mahomes and the Chiefs or even Burrow and the Bengals, but we've closed the gap. And we think with everything else we can do, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, it's going to give us a heck of a chance to go up against those teams in January and be able to win. So, you know, well, time will tell. And ultimately, something looks like on paper, it's got to play out, and you got to put in the work, and you've got to have enough luck and health along the way. And
Sure.
we certainly know health and injuries have been a big part of their downfall in some of these recent seasons. But ultimately, it's time to take the next step. You know, the Ravens did not invest the contract that they did in Lamar Jackson to continue to not be able to get out of the first or second round of the playoffs. It's time for this team, not just Lamar, but this team, this entire team. And that includes John Harbaugh, mind you,
Of
who
course, of
when
course.
his best, you know, his most success and most lucrative days as Ravens head coach were a long time ago. And that doesn't mean they've been bad, but it hasn't been that same ceiling for them in a long, long time. So it's time for everyone to make a deep run and play into late January. Doesn't mean you have to get to the Super Bowl or have to win it this year, but I think for me, kind of looking at this thing, and again, you always understanding there can be unforeseen circumstances that change the
Sure.
expectations, but yeah, I want to see this team get to an AFC Championship game at the very least. You
We
know,
all do.
can you get to that point? And if you do that, and this looks how I think it can look, and you meet those expectations, then I think everyone will be everyone's really excited now, but I think people will be even more excited about this team moving forward over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Luke, always great stuff. I appreciate your time, your thoughts, and your insight and your wisdom. Please tell our listeners where they can find you, Baltimore Positive WNST, your blog, and all the other great things that you do.
Thank you very much. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Finishing up the homestand at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Orioles head back out on the road then, going to Toronto and New York. I will be live in Owings Mills for the start of OTAs. One OTA day open each of the next 3 weeks, followed by mandatory minicamp 3 days in mid-June. I will be on the scene hearing from John Harbaugh. We expect to hear from Lamar Jackson sooner rather than later and to see him out there and as well as plenty of other Ravens players. You want to be or check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, the latest from Owings Mills. I have Orioles thoughts as well as they continue their strong start to the 2023 season. My blog, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you got the Ravens schedule sent out to your mobile device. You'll get significant roster moves or a notable signing. Any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Sound from Oriole Park at Camden Yards, Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, my friend. Always fun having you on. Have fun today and the rest of the week and the weekend. We got Preakness. We got lacrosse playoffs. We got all kind of great stuff happening. PGA, you name it. Great time to be a sports fan.
Absolutely, Dennis. Plenty going on, and we'll have plenty to talk about next week.
You got it, my friend. Stay well.
Thanks.
My pleasure. There he goes. Luke Jones here. The great, if not brilliant, Luke Jones here on WNST. Catch him here on Baltimore Positive. With that, we'll take our next break. Come back right after this.